Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
It's fair to say that we're a nation of snoopers, whether you're peering down from the top of the bus into somebody's kitchen or sitting in judgment of the people brave enough to open their doors to Dermot Bannon on the television. We can't get enough of other people's stuff. But now, people's home spaces are being opened up to even more scrutiny by the invasion of apps like Zoom and Teams, as many of us work from home. So why do we love other people's spaces just so much, and what can we learn from the little bits we see? Well, Sam Gosling is a professor of psychology at the University of Texas, in Austin, Texas, that is, I think, and his book, Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You, to give it the full title, lifts the lid on our innate nosiness. I shouldn't say noisiness. Actually, I'll tell you what, Sam, welcome to the programme. Sam, this is not just an Irish phenomenon then, is it?
Not at all. No, it's worldwide right now, and we're incredibly interested in other people, and we always have been, because other people have offered us the greatest threats and the greatest opportunities. So we're always monitoring for information to learn about others.
Well then, why is it that we love snooping into other people's lives and spaces? I mean, what needs does it satisfy in us? Is it insecurity? Is it getting ideas? Is it just morbid curiosity?
Well, I don't think it's morbid curiosity at all. I think knowing what we can expect from others, who can we trust, who's reliable, who's likely to be open-minded, all of those things are incredibly important in guiding our anticipated interactions with others. So we seek this information wherever we can. When we meet them, we're monitoring the cues in the things they're saying, and maybe the way they're standing and the way they're dressed. And so when we have access to something like their house, whether it's by being there in person or through a Zoom screen, we are trying to pick up on those too, just automatically.
Well, you know, funny thing is, back in the day when people used to bring albums into school and vinyl, I would judge a person instantly by whatever album they had. Like, I won't mention a particular artist or whatever, say, God, that guy, obviously a nerd. The best of Brotherhood of Man? I'm not talking to him. But if they had a cool album, they were cool as well. So is it a bit of that? I mean, what are the suppositions that we make about people's whole character based on what their spaces are like?
It's exactly like that. Indeed, we've done a fair bit of research looking at, you know, the associations between types, genres of music and their personalities too. So it's exactly that. It's picking up on these clues. And the reason clues are there is for a number of reasons. So one of them is, for example, we try to tell others what we're like in a way. You know, people will wear, you know, their favorite band on their T-shirt or something like that. So in the same way they'll do that, or a signature, you know, at the bottom of their email file, they'll have a quote from a favorite person. So part of the clues are clues that people are wanting to tell you, because people actually want to be known. But there are other clues too. Other clues, for example, to about the way the person thinks and feels, or just other clues to their everyday behaviors. Just, you know, Sherlock Holmes uses this, right? He snoops around somebody's house to find evidence for criminal behaviors.
Yeah.
You and I snoop around to look for evidence of everyday behaviors.
Well, like, do you think we should maybe, like, just say the average thing at the moment of Zoom and like six people on a conference call or whatever, and you're like, hoping that they don't see that you're wearing your pajamas from the waist down, etc., and all these kind of things. The stuff that you have behind, I mean, should you think about lighting and props and colour and camera angles and all that kind of thing?
Well, it's true that people will form impressions. I don't know if it's a bad thing if they form impressions. I mean, the truth is, if they already know you and your space is a certain way, then your space is likely to give accurate cues about what you're like. So, I think it's perfectly okay for people to see those things. They get to learn about you, and that's all right.
And I presume, like, some advice would be, like, lose clutter and all that kind of thing. But, I mean, most times I see these things on the news, on the television, it's always bookcases, and it's always, like, the right kind of book. There's nothing too embarrassing there.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a number of things. In fact, one of the things we've learned from snooping is really not to go too heavily on any single cue, because a single cue doesn't mean much alone. You really need to be looking for patterns. So if you see a plastic, you know, blue crocodile sitting on the shelf behind them, don't go too far with that. Look for other clues that might help you sort of disambiguate the meaning of that crocodile. So, are there other toys there, or are there other crocodile elements, or are there other playful things? So you can essentially put those clues together to try to understand what they might be saying about someone.
Well, then you, as a professor of psychology, can you learn an awful lot about somebody from the things they choose to have around them? You know, whether somebody is introverted, extroverted, fun, not fun?
Yeah, you can certainly learn some things. So one of the things that comes through most clearly is essentially what this trait called openness to new experiences, which really distinguishes people at the high end of the scale who tend to be kind of more open to new things, philosophical, abstract thinkers, like complexity, like the unknown, versus people on the low end of the pole who tend to be more conventional, traditional, more concrete. And so the clues to that are things like, is the space unique? Is it unusual? Are there things in there, for example, they're more likely to have original art non-conventional things in their space versus somebody who's at the other end of that scale who's likely to have more sort of standard things. They often tend to have more sports memorabilia. They tend to have kind of more conventional things. That's a pretty good clue to that trait.
Yeah, I always do mine away from the Picassos because I don't really like showing off.
Very wise.
Indeed, absolutely. So listen, what about, like, are there any rules or tips? I mean, like, for instance, if you want to be seen in the best light, if you'll pardon the pun, because it is, like, should no light source be behind you? Should you make use of other light sources? And maybe just kind of, you know, torso and head kind of stuff, but not just your face. I mean, the face thing is ridiculous because if you're right in on top of somebody, that doesn't work either.
Yeah. Oh, well, for that, you'd have to talk to somebody in production to understand that. what I would advise, but, you know, if you know, one of the traits that is perhaps most relevant to most occupations is this trait known as our conscientiousness, which is really our people kind of reliable and on top of things and task-oriented. And that you can judge by essentially the orderliness and the tidiness of a space. So that is an example where clutter would tend to convey some low on that pole, which is something that people care about in many occupational contexts.
Well, that thing I mentioned earlier on, like obviously people having their homes and offices laid bare to Zoom and Skype now so that, you know, so many people working from home. Lots of people sitting in front of bookshelves all of a sudden. Have you found that people will actually curate their spaces if they think that they'll be seen by somebody other than themselves?
Absolutely, yeah. And in fact, that's one of the things we do when we're snooping. So we would, you know, we'd want to compare the areas that are kind of presented for public consumption, say a living room or something like that, with the areas that are meant to be for more selective consumption, like the bedroom or some area like that. And so do you see differences between those? Do you see all kind of the learned highbrow books sitting on the coffee table in the living room, but the kind of trashy romance novels sitting on the bedside table, the ones that are really read? So we will look for those differences between the sort of the areas meant to be public and the areas meant to be private for precisely that reason.
And to take it out to a wider context, isn't it fair to say that, like, you know, well, I can't go and visit major mansions in Los Angeles because it's too far away, etc., that the internet has now allowed me to literally kind of, if you like, you know, check out every single room of all of these places. Our obsession with property in general and how other people live, what's that saying about us all the time? Whatever about, you know, the Skype thing saying about the people we're talking to, what does it say about us to look into all these things? Like the snooping in a wider context.
I think it says a number of things, but I think one of the things related to what I do is essentially it's this sort of implicit, even if not conscious, this implicit recognition that there's a lot of value in people's spaces. And there is, because it turns out it's quite hard to change your space a lot. You know, you know, when we were sending our teams into people's spaces, you know, there's a big difference between a room that is kind of deeply, deeply structurally tidy and organized and a place that has been hurriedly tidied up before people arrive. And those sorts of differences, the difference between a tidied and a tidy room, you know, at a deep structural level, those are things you can't just change quickly. And they reflect, and they're important and they're revealing because they reflect persistent and consistent behaviors over a long period of time, not something you can just turn around if you want to create a quick false impression.
And do you think that in general then we kind of like to kind of drink in other people's lives, you know, either, you know, pigeonholing people or nabbing ideas from posher people's ideas?
I think. Well, there are a number of reasons why. I think there's a sort of a fascination as a social species. We've always been fascinated with people who have high status, because those are the ones that typically have, you know, through our evolutionary history, have greatest sway on our lives. So we attend to high status individuals quite naturally.
And do you think, just staying with that one, just on that point before I get back to the actual, like the whole real estate website thing that are constructed to, I presume, elicit desire for some kind of new reality, do you think it's because we want to live like them?
I think in a way, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so typically having high status is has been in the past, you know, very valuable. Those are, I mean, we in a sense, right, we are the descendants of high status people because those are the guys who tend to pass on their genes. So we have that tendency to want to be in that area.
And the difference between an office, which is now the home, and the difference between an office mm-hmm. and a home, you know, a lot of us spend a lot of time in the office, and the home is private in that. Basically, humans having a need to stamp elements of their personalities and their surroundings, they like a lot of people do it in the office, and a lot of people do it at home. It's very, yeah. it's very different for both, is it?
It can be. It can. Typically, it's actually rather common across both, and that's, you know, I think really relevant to this phenomena, you know, of hot desking, where people, you know, are meant to come in and just sit at any desk yeah. each day and work there. And it's one of the reasons why that doesn't work very well, because people can't create the environment that suits them, that suits their identity, that suits their kind of even arousal levels and their emotion levels and their thought levels. It doesn't feel right to people, and so for a lot of people. It doesn't work. You aren't able. They can only really work when they have created a space that fits them.
But is there a big difference between how introverts organise their spaces and how extroverts might?
There's a little yes, a difference. So I mean, essentially, what we know about extroverts, as we all know, is that, you know, extroverts essentially like people. They get energized by having people around. They even prefer music with vocals in it. There's all kinds of reasons for that. So essentially, they are preparing their spaces for hoped for and anticipated interactions. You know, in the office space, they're, you know, even likely to do things like have, you know, a jar of candy on the desk to kind of lure people in. Whereas the introverts, you know, they prefer to be alone. So they're not looking for that. The difference really we found is essentially extroverts have a place that just kind of feels welcoming when you go into it. You want to go in, it makes you want to stay, which is exactly what they're trying to do. The introverts will they will have a comfortable chair with a lamp over it and some books by it, so, you know, so they can curl up alone and read a book.
Right, well then, finally, do you think there's an element of just wanting to impress, wanting to impress whoever else happens to be on with you on Zoom or whatever? Like, are we anxious always to be perceived in the best light, particularly in work?
So, a bit, yes. So we do, certainly, within a certain work context, there are contexts in dating contexts, working contexts and so on, where we think it's important to be seen in a positive light. However, over and above that, we actually want to be seen, we want to bring others to see us like we see ourselves. So we're trying to be known. And there's quite a fair bit of research showing that when we can do that, when we can bring others to see us like we see ourselves, we tend to be more happy, more healthy, and more productive.
Do you know, a funny thing is that every time I see somebody doing a Skype thing on TV these days, I spend a lot of my time kind of going sideways like that to see what books are on, see what just the titles
right.
of the book.
Yeah, me too.
And I
me
should
too.
Actually be listening to what they're saying. All right, listen, Sam, thank you so much for talking to us. Sam Gosling, Professor of Psychology at the University of Austin in Texas. Thank you very much indeed, Sam.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.